Welcome back, everybody, into Bill's Chat. I am Josh McCarty. With me tonight, as always, is Luca. Luca, that's more like it. 34-10, the Bills get a victory over the Tennessee Titans after 3 weeks of either very close win or very disappointing losses. The Bills get back on track, and I will start this show off, Luca, like I do so often. After the Bills walked off the field with a 34-10 victory over the Tennessee Titans to improve to 5-2 on the season, what were your thoughts?
My thoughts were just nice, relaxed relief. I mean, it feels like it's been centuries since the last time we've been able to enjoy a Bills game where it was, for the most part, comfortable. Obviously, there's a little bit of that caveat with the "for the most part," which we will get into a little bit here. But overall, I think it's fair to say when the thing was done and dusted, we were all, I want to say we were all in victory formation mentally by mid fourth quarter at that point, where it was comfortable, relaxing. It was an enjoyment. If you're the kind of individual like myself, where you have other games going on, you weren't even putting two eyes anymore on that Bills game as you were watching other things around the league in the 1 o'clock slate, so on and so forth. So it was a fantastic feeling as the Bills had completed the game and were walking off the field. And yeah, for the most part, I would call it a just nice, relaxed relief. It was fantastic to finally have that, considering what had been happening the past few weeks.
I think for a lot of folks watching this game, this felt like a tale of two halves, and it certainly was. I mean, the Bills were trailing at halftime. They started the game off, I want to say, with three and outs. But I'm actually disappointed in myself. I had tweeted out from our podcast account that the Bills were going to win this game 34-14. And then the announcement was made on Saturday that Rudolph was starting over Levis. And I was like, oh, I'm going to update my prediction now. I'm going to make it 34-15. I think they'll go for 2-point conversion late, just as a joke. But that was my way of saying, I think the Bills will outclass this team. I don't bring this up to like pat myself on the back for hitting the 34, because I think I wish I would have thought more about the coming off of a short rest week where they played Monday night. They had that emotional win against the Jets. I think there were reasons to think that the Bills could have come out sluggish and could have started slow. Luca, was there any point during this game where you either became nervous, where you contemplated the Bills could lose this game, where you got frustrated? What was your emotional roller coaster like? Like, what was, if you're looking at a roller coaster, you're watching me on YouTube, what was the lowest your roller coaster got emotionally today?
Probably around the second drive for Tennessee, where it was like, we're really not going to just cover these checkdowns, are we? Like, it's just going to be one of these days where we're going to let the underneath stuff happen, even though it clearly looks like Mason Rudolph in Tennessee has no interest in doing anything downfield at all. But what I will say on top of that is that was my lowest point, because at no point did I ever believe, even when, you know, Tennessee had 10 points on the scoreboard, did I think the Bills were in jeopardy of losing this game. I was very comfortable, because even with how Tennessee was able to get those 10 points, not once did it look comfortable for them. And also, as I just said, they were doing it in such a vanilla way, in such a way that's no risk and stuff like that. And it's like, eventually, this Bills offense with Josh Allen will not have their head up where the sun don't shine, and they're going to get things figured out. And when that moment comes, because it will happen in this game, eventually, then Tennessee will have to answer in an aggressive fashion. And the only time they got aggressive, Josh, is when they decided not to go for it on fourth down when they're in the red zone, but when they're on their own 39 or whatever it was. Mm-hmm. And it failed miserably, thanks to a rookie, Dwayne Carter. Thankful, you know, it's like Tennessee couldn't get out of their own way even when things were going right for them. Mm-hmm. And eventually it all just came collapsing down on them once the Bills got things rolling. So not once did I ever feel this game was anywhere near at risk of a loss. You know, I don't even think I thought that the Bills wouldn't cover, you know, the spread of 9 points. Like, it's one of those things where, okay, it's not a smooth start. You know, it reminded me of where we were at with the Cardinals game. Things weren't smooth early on in that game, But at no point did I think the Bills were in jeopardy of losing it and or not covering. It's just like, what's going to happen when they do finally get into gear? Is Arizona going to be able to maintain whatever they're trying to do? Is Tennessee, in this case, going to be able to maintain whatever they're doing? And once you start forcing the issue with those kinds of teams, they eventually crumble because that's who they are at this moment in time. And thankfully, that's exactly how it all took place. And just a little cherry on top, Josh, the one thing I feel like, even with the Bills defense in its current state, and you're watching it not go great with Baylen Specter and coverage in the first half, yada, 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 it's like they don't allow points in the second half, no matter who they're playing. It's a weird thing that they do. It's, you know, for some odd reason, they do not allow a lot of points in the second half. So even if things are going awry in the first half, if it's not working out, whatever defense is out there, they're going to figure it out and just lock things down in the second half. So again, you just need the Bills offense to get going like they should be able to, and eventually it'll work out. So luckily all of those things transpired as it is. And the lowest point for me was about, yeah, the second drive for the Titans, just because I couldn't believe we kept leaving that underneath stuff going, considering it didn't feel like Tennessee wanted to do anything else otherwise.
You know, it's funny you bring that up because I had a weird thought during this game. It was announced on Saturday that Will Levis was not healthy enough to play. And it was so frustrating watching the Bills play so off on Mason Rudolph when the book on him is he is like, if you go far back enough with the Bills, he's like Trent Edwards, Captain Checkdown. He loves checking down to the flats, high completion percentage, not a lot of downfield throws. And my initial thought, Luca, was I wonder if the Bills spent all week game planning for Will Levis. Like, if you play against Will Levis, it makes sense why, hey, go ahead and check it down, Will. You've proven to us that you're not patient enough to do that. We dare you to go a 14-play drive without making a mistake. It's almost like they had the Will Levis game plan, and they didn't switch it to the Rudolph game plan until a few drives in when they're like, wait a minute, we probably should cover the underneath stuff. But I agree with you. It was frustrating for the defense, and then you look up, and it amounted to 10 points. And it's one of those things where it's like, okay, these are NFL offenses. They're going to get yards. It's okay. But at the end of the day, the Bills held an NFL team to 10 points. But that's not the story of the game. The story of the game, Luca, was Amari Cooper made his Bills debut. And in this debut, Amari Cooper finishes the day, as I'm talking slowly to go see it, finishes the day with 4 catches for 61 yards and a touchdown. And I thought this game reminded me in some ways of the 2021 Bills at Tampa Bay Buccaneers game. Stay with me. So in that game, the Bills fell down early. Not the same situation here, but you'll understand my point when I get there. They fell down early. The Bills were kind of in the middle of a real struggling streak in the season. And in the second half, the Bills were, I think they were down 24-3 at one point. The Bills started putting together touchdown drive after touchdown drive. They got the tempo going. And it's like all of a sudden they found their formula and they lost the game in overtime. But I remember feeling great after that game. Besides the result, I was like, those are the Bills I know they can be. Luca, I really feel like in the second half of this game, the Bills found their formula. Is it going to look this easy every week? Absolutely not. When you have an offense on the other side of the field that can't move the ball at all, it makes it very easy. But I think the Bills found their formula in a sense of when Amari Cooper, Khalil Shakir, and Keon Coleman are your primary three receivers, when Dalton Kincaid is your primary tight end, and then whatever running back you want to use, this offense is going to be very difficult to contain. And what Amari Cooper opens up for Dalton Kincaid and Keon Coleman specifically, it's you can't even quantify the value. It goes so much further than just his 4 catches for 61 yards. He's opening up the rest of the field for all of these guys. He's drawing coverage. And whether it was the Curtis Samuel injury or whether it was the Bills just realizing in the third quarter, like, hey, we need to get Amari Cooper back on the field because every time he's not on the field, they're just blitzing us and playing man across the board and daring us to throw into that coverage. The way he opens it up is Stephon Diggs-esque. And Luka, I think that the Bills not only found it, they forced it in his first game. And I think going forward, it should make every fan excited about what this offense can be as they continue to integrate Amari Cooper into their game plan.
You kind of hit it with what your example is or what your comparison is. I see exactly what you're talking about. But ultimately what you're saying and the message and what you're saying is even more spot on. And we've talked about it before, even in previous teams, where it's, you need that guy that just fits everyone else exactly where they need to be. And then on top of it, the on-field impact of an Amari Cooper is just that it opens things up for everyone else. Because what it felt like before Amari Cooper got onto this team was, it was very difficult for these receivers to get open, find spaces, whatever they needed to do. And Allen didn't have open receivers to throw at. Well, the impact of Amari Cooper is all of a sudden you saw your Shakir and Keon Coleman's more open downfield wherever they needed to be, that Allen could find them much easier. And Keon was able to make big play after big play. And Shakir was still doing his thing. As you mentioned, Kincaid was also the perfect complementary piece that he should be at the tight end position. And then, oh yeah, Amari Cooper is no slouch. I think everything's okay. I think the funniest thing with Amari Cooper in this game, Josh, is going into this weekend, I thought you heard a lot about, oh, is Amari Cooper truly still what he was even last season because his drop rate's so high? And what happens on the very first target to Amari Cooper in the first half is the ball goes through his hands and he drops it. Well, I laughed. As soon as that happened, I said, Amari Cooper probably hasn't seen a ball thrown at him that fast in at least 4+ years. And yeah, that's exactly what happened. He's like, oh shit. Like, that thing traveled at his hands so hot. Even, of course, they practiced a little bit, but in game speed, it's different. And it's like, he is not used to something like that. Lo and behold, 4 more targets later, he has 66 yards and a touchdown. You did say 61 earlier. Just wanted to give that little stat correction in there. 66 in a score. Ooh. And the first catch in the game being that touchdown, it was just a beautiful sight. You know, it was a sight for sore eyes for Bills fans, where you have this, I'm not even going to call Amari Cooper this alpha. He's just that number one, right? He's a true one. And for that, all of a sudden, it opens up everything else among the receiving weapons. And all of a sudden, your Keon Coleman can sit comfortably where he needs to in that complementary outside weapon. You have Shakir still doing his thing, but all attention was not on him, because you would even hear it through broadcasts. They would always mention how Khalil Shakir is kind of that guy for Allen now and stuff. So if the commentary individuals are party to it, of course, defensive coordinators and individuals are also aware of where Josh Allen prefers to go with the ball currently. And all due respect to Shakir, he can't be that number one go-to guy with what his role and responsibility is. It feels weird to me, Josh, where like someone could feel comfortable that Shakir Beez is a number one if he's primarily playing on the inside in the slot, because that's where all the traffic is. That's where all the damage is. That's where all the hits come. That's where you get hurt. It's like, you can't be that guy. You need to open up the space for him a little bit, which is exactly what an Amari Cooper does. And it was beautiful. It's amazing the simple impact one individual's presence can have. And that's exactly what we saw. The production was just a cherry on top, honestly. What his presence did for this offense and what it clearly looked like. Yes, it's Tennessee. They're not the greatest defense. I don't think they're any slouch of a defense either. I would put them middle of the road. But you could tell how much different it looked efficiency-wise from this game compared to the previous games, even in wins like the Monday night game against the Jets. Of course, it felt a lot more difficult outside of like the first couple drives. And even then, it was just thanks to Ray Davis having a very successful ground game early on that kind of opened it up early for them. So it was just absolutely perfect to see how everyone sliding in that appropriate spot just opened up everything and made things easier for Josh Allen, the offense, and the entire team moving forward, that we were able to get back to that more comfortable game plan in 60 minutes.
I think this is going to be one of those games, Luca, where we kind of weave in and out of big picture and what happened in the game, because the game was cool. Like, it was fun. It was a relaxing game in the second half. But I think a lot of us are just like, okay, what does it mean? Because we know there's going to be bigger games coming up than the Mason Rudolph Tennessee Titans. And I want to go out here and say this. The Bills really made their team trademark, whatever you want to call it, everybody eats. And for me, I think that the Bills have been confusing everybody eats with everybody plays. And I looked at some stats this week after the Cooper trade. The Bills are one of only five teams in the NFL that have a wide receiver five on their roster that has at least 30% of the offensive snaps. And that's just way too many. And I think that everybody eats is a good idea. I throw it to the open guy. I can get behind that. Don't funnel your offense to one or two specific targets. I understand that logic, but that doesn't mean that, you know, 3 weeks ago, it's like, okay, Khalil Shakir, you're going to come off now. And Marquez Valdez-Scantling is going to come on and it's his turn. No. And I think specifically when you look at what the Bills have now, your offense needs to focus on a primary unit of Amari Cooper, Khalil Shakir in the slot. And then from there, you know, Kincaid and Knox will mix in depending on the situation. It's going to be more Kincaid. Davis and James Cook will mix in. We can talk about that later. I think they're both really, really good. And then I would say mainly Keon Coleman, but you're still going to have to find a role at some point for Curtis Samuel. You're paying him a lot of money. I do think he showed some life last week against the Jets. And then, you know, now he's hurt again. So we'll see what that happened. Or was he sick? No, he got hurt again. So we'll see what happens there. And then honestly, look, Mac Hollins, you're Jake Kumerow. Come in obvious situations when the entire world knows you're going to run. Come in when a couple wide receivers just both ran deep on the same play and a couple guys need a spell. But, you know, your days of being a primary receiver where it's the first third down of the game, it's the third play of the game, and you're on the field and you're read number one, that needs to be done. Okay, we've graduated beyond the Mac Hollins as a primary target in this offense. We need to be at the point now where we can start to look back and laugh at the time where Mac Hollins was a primary target for Josh Allen. You have Amari Cooper, you have Khalil Shakir, and before I make my next point, Luca, do you agree with what I'm saying about the differentiation between everybody eats and everybody plays? Because to me, backups are backups for a reason. I get that guys need to come on and spell. Guys are going to get tired. It's a very, very excruciating sport. But I think that the Bills have leaned way too much into these rotations, and it's time to really focus on your best players.
Yeah, I know exactly where you're coming from, and I agree with it. It's a great thing to be comfortable with your depth. You shouldn't be depending on your depth for overall production. Your depth is your depth. I also say it all the time, Josh, where it's like, if you're getting heavy into your depth, you shouldn't have great expectations. You shouldn't be expecting that nothing should change. If you're diving deep into your wide receiver pool to have big production, you're probably in trouble at that position, and it's not going to be pretty, which is exactly what we saw for a lot of these weeks prior to this one. And now, as you're saying it so perfectly, now that you have this true number one in Amari, who is just kind of, you know what I love about Amari the most? It does feel like he just shows up and does his business, and he does it at a very high level. The thing that I highlight the most to that thought is not necessarily that he doesn't talk. It's the fact that he doesn't even care about something like his number, where he's had a new number at every stop he's made. It's like, no, I'm just here to show up, do my business, and do it well. And he does exactly that. So with that, though, you now have this guy, as you've talked about at length and as we'll probably talk about for the remainder of the season now at this point, that puts Keon, that puts Shakir in their more comfortable where they should be roles. That puts Kincaid and sprinkle in your Knox where need to in their comfortable roles. That puts then less stress on the run game like it was previously, because yes, it is nice to have this mantra of everybody eats, but you have your key guys for a reason, and those are the individuals you need to lean on. And what we saw even today is the most targeted receiver was a tie between Keon Coleman and Shakir, but then Cooper obviously made his massive impact where he did and will still do his thing. That to me is the more realistic and better approach of an everybody eats. Yes, you have this true number one, but luckily for you, it's not a Diggs-like number one where he needs and demands his 12 plus targets. So therefore, you can still find your other key contributors to get your overall better production, which is exactly what it is. It doesn't need to be like everybody plays, as you're saying, and all of a sudden you have Mac Hollins and a very overpaid, useless Curtis Samuel. No disrespect. I know he got banged up, but you no have disrespect. Them playing.
I just called him useless, but no disrespect. So I'm good.
Overpaid, useless Curtis Samuel, who needs to play because that's how you believe it to be, as everybody eats. It's like, no. Stay on the sideline. Your role is only if needed, break glass, whatever it is, or package situations, blah, blah, blah. But look, X, Y, and Z, 1, 2, and 3, these are our guys. This is who will primarily be getting the snap share, and it makes all the sense in the world.
So I was watching this game today, and this is not even the first time I had this thought. One, I said this when I went live right after the Cooper trade was announced. Amari Cooper, game-wise, skill set-wise, reminds me a lot of Stephon Diggs. I think they play very similar. They both crisp routes. The way they set you up with their route running is like chef's kiss, put it on a reel and show it to all aspiring wide receivers. You could even tell on this touchdown route today. I mean, he was against off cover, so it was a layup for him, but that DB had no chance and he didn't even do anything too fancy. Now, look, I'm not calling him Stephon Diggs. Diggs has better hands than Cooper. I'm talking peak Diggs when he was in Buffalo. Diggs has better hands. They're different players. Cooper's a little bigger player. But I do think that they're very similar in their route running. So when I look at these Bills and what they can be, and I look at my favorite iteration of the Bills as far as their offense, the 2020 Bills, I think the skill position players are kind of similar. You have Amari Cooper in the Diggs role. You have Khalil Shakir in the Beasley role. And then the John Brown / Gabe Davis role. Remember, John Brown was hurt some that year, so Gabe Davis was there. Is going to be Keon Coleman primarily, and then maybe Curtis Samuel mixing in. And then you have Kincaid instead of Knox. And then you have what I think is a better offensive line. And then you also have Ray Davis and James Cook instead of Singletary and Moss. Luca, I'm not saying it's the best group of weapons Josh Allen's ever had, but from where we were at 3 weeks ago, wondering what happened to our Bills, how do you have this Lamborghini of a quarterback and surround him with Ford Tauruses on offense, to now me honestly having a conversation with you saying, this group of weapons actually reminds me of the 2020 Buffalo Bills weapons. It's amazing what one player can do when everybody else slides down a notch. And you're like, I didn't love you as a one, but now I like you as a two. I didn't love you as a two, but damn, as a three, that's pretty good looking. It all just falls into place.
Yeah. First and foremost, you dated yourself a little bit. Ford Taurus has been discontinued since 2019. Although I love it. Yeah, it's spot on perfect, of course. Like,
that's your Curtis Samuel.
That is your most average below par, like, you know, whatever. It's a mid-sized car and it's going to get me from A to B. So why may as well? It's the perfect, like, it gets in the right head. But I was like, I don't think they've made that for years. Okay.
Is that what you were Googling? I saw you Google.
That was exactly what I was
Googling.
It
always makes me nervous when you Google.
I was like, I know it's been discontinued, but I don't know for how long. where was it going from? Yeah, it just the slot in conversation. It's like, yeah, Keon couldn't be that guy who is ISO X, right? Just out on an island by himself. Hey, go create separation on your own, on your matchup, and make it happen, young fella. It's like, no, like, give him the ability to have secondary coverage looks and even be matched up with Shakir on the same side or whatever it is, and let that attention be drawn elsewhere in Amari Cooper. And it felt so right, and it made sense then why all of a sudden you noticed the two big plays Keon Coleman made. One, he broke a little bit of a tackle and he was able to run downfield a bit with it. But then the other one, he was just open downfield a little bit and then was able to turn and go upfield with that ball. That wasn't happening, and you weren't even getting those kinds of looks previous to Amari Cooper. I'm not saying Amari Cooper is this magical spell. I just think that's a nature of what happens when you introduce a guy like that. It shifts coverages, it shifts attention, and you have someone else that defensive coordinator and defensive personnel just have to account for and recognize pre-snap every single play. That's the power of a true number one. And then to your point, Amari Cooper does kind of have that Diggs feel, because effectively it's just, he's a crisp route runner. He can kind of make everything work. He's got it all in his bag, stuff like that. He's not overwhelming with speed, but he's still got a little bit of jump to him. And then he's still got great hands. I know the drop metrics are there, but his hands are still phenomenal. And it's just, he's everything you want in a wide receiver without it being a Justin Jefferson, CeeDee Lamb, and everything else that comes with those just upper echelon, true elite of elites. He is everything we needed in this. And then, yeah, the comparison to 2020 is pretty spot on now, where if you were looking at it previous to Amari Cooper, we didn't have that. You didn't have your number one like Diggs in 2020 that could fill that in. So imagine that 2020, 2021 offense, Josh, where Diggs didn't exist and Cole Beasley needed to be your guy. I don't know how far that would have gotten. As great as Cole Beasley was in 2020, I don't think he would have been a 1,000-yard receiver with no Diggs on the outside. That probably doesn't happen. No disrespect to John Brown. John Brown was great in his time. He's not demanding that kind of look and coverage like a Stephon Diggs does. I will be curious to see kind of how that outside does develop when Curtis Samuel becomes healthy again. If I don't know what the injury situation is with him. Are they going to primarily, or are they going to try to use him a little bit more downfield now that they feel more comfortable with what Amari Cooper is able to do for them and so on and so forth? That would be great, because it's really frustrating that, you know, he's basically an overpriced gadget, flash candy, you know, whatever the hell you want to call him, just eye candy BS. Like, he's useless. Like, he's useless right now, and you're paying him a lot of money. Let's do something else with him. Let's utilize his speed a little bit. Let's take some shots with him. Sounds like a fun idea. Sounds like something this offense needs a little bit of. Now that you have your true number one, now that you have your reliable slot guy that's not going to be overwhelmed with coverage looks, and everyone else can be in their spots, let's see what the hell we can do with this guy we paid a lot of offseason money to, the limited resources that we did have to do it, and see where that could even transpire. Because if Curtis Samuel can become useful from useless, Josh, I think this offense has the potential to be even better than that 2021, like you said it was similar to.
Can he kick field goals?
Oh, Jesus.
I'm trying to find a role for him. He's versatile. Speaking of field goals, Tyler Bass had a good day. Perfect. Today. He made all of his kicks, so we're happy to see that. Let's talk about that real quick. The Bills did sign a kicker to their practice squad. Gosh, I don't even know the guy's name. Luca, that's so bad. I should have pulled that up. But
yeah, I mean, he's a product out of University of Arizona, so it doesn't matter anyways.
What I will tell you about the kicker they signed, there's nothing on his college or pro resume that tells you he's any kind of answer.
Yeah.
He's on the practice squad. I think somebody has already said that the Bills are still looking at kickers. I have heard through the grapevine, take it for what it's worth, that Riley Patterson is somebody that's going to be on the Bills' radar. He's the guy that was playing in Jacksonville a couple years back. He's from around the same parts that I'm from. Went to the same school as AJ Epenesa. He had tryouts last week, maybe with the Jets, he was trying out with other teams last week. I know a couple weeks back he was even on his way out to California to try out. So for whatever reason, he hasn't stuck on. But I do know he's somebody that's on the Bills' radar. Don't know if that's gonna amount to anything, but take it for what it's worth. All right, Luca. Let's talk about Ray Davis. It feels like it's been forever since we've chatted, because we did a pregame show for the Jets game, so we didn't get to break that down together. And then now we're chatting after the fact. Ray Davis burst onto the scene in the Jets game. You know, we didn't know if Cook was going to play. It turned out he was ruled out. And Ray Davis was really, as big as anybody, a reason why the Bills won that game. And now he comes in today. He scores a touchdown. I need to stop pulling the box score down. But when you look at a yards per carry, he outproduced James Cook today. Bills Titans box score. Here we go. Boom. Ray Davis.
5 carries, 41 yards.
5 for 41. And then James Cook had 12 for 32.
Yeah.
And I'm not telling you, like, there needs to be a running back controversy, because quite honestly, unless you're Saquon Barkley or Derrick Henry or Christian McCaffrey when he's healthy, no team really has a bell cow running back anymore. Yeah. What I think has happened these last 2 weeks, Luca, is Ray Davis has absolutely made the case that this needs to be a two-back offense. And I do think there's a fun thunder-lightning dynamic here with the Bills, with James Cook being the faster, quicker running back and Ray Davis being more of like the bowling ball. What I will say, though, last week against the Jets and then again today, Ray Davis, the running style does not compare, because the player I'm going to compare him to here, it has such a unique running style. I don't know I've ever seen anybody run like him. But this trait, Isaiah Pacheco, Ray Davis, in the little bit we've seen of him, has that Isaiah Pacheco trait where it's like he squeezes every potential yard out of every single run. You never feel like you get cheated when you watch Ray Davis run. If he runs for four, you're not sitting there thinking, man, that arm tackle got him down. He could have gone for six. And that's Isaiah Pacheco. James Cook has the ability to break one for 80. James Cook also, unfortunately, feels like a lot of times there's contact that gets him to the ground and you're like, man, it feels like he could have broke that one. Ray Davis, I don't know if he'll ever break a 60-yard touchdown run, but if there's 6 yards there to be gained, it feels like Luka, he's finding a way to get 7 or 8. And that game against the Jets, when it was like within an eyelash of going either way, those yards added up. And I am super excited about seeing what Ray Davis can continue to do in this offense.
I believe the conversation to be had with Ray Davis and James Cook and the backfield in general is not anything where one individual needs to be discredited or whatever you want to call it. I think what you had said was pretty spot on, where if you're outside of Christian McCaffrey, Saquon Barkley, who I regard as the best in the league currently, those individuals, it's like those are your only bell cows and individuals who no one will take over their job when needed. What I think the Bills are falling into now is they have a true smash and dash backfield. They have a true 1-2. Like, you know what's funny is I think about like the backfield with the Giants during the late 2000s, where they had Ahmad Bradshaw, and they had Brandon Jacobs, and I feel like there was even a third guy involved at one point, but they had these guys who at that time it was actually less normal, but they would use them for all their different roles and responsibilities and achieve what they ultimately wanted to do, game plan wise, game flow wise, whatever it was, whatever it called for, they had the answer for it out of their backfield. You know, someone like myself, I loved watching Brandon Jacobs just because it was like watching a linebacker run down people. Yeah. It was just fascinating. But overall, them having that smash and dash is what ultimately led to the success of that generation, it felt like, on top of having, of course, Eli Manning and the receiving game that they had in that era as well. But that complementary backfield shouldn't be overlooked. What the Bills are falling into now is this rookie, Ray Davis. I'm with you. You watch him, it's physical, and he's never leaving any meat on the bone. It's all there to be had for him. He wants every inch. He's fighting for every yard. It's that old school mentality. Don't leave any yards on the field. And he is achieving that. But then you still are not going to just overlook James Cook, because James Cook is your ultimate threat out of the backfield. As you said, he could break it for 80 yards at any point in time. And I think that's recognized by defenses, where they want to overcommit to just stopping him, because I'm sure it's also recognized, as you're saying it, Josh, where he can be brought down a little bit easier. I feel like that's kind of a, I'm not going to say it's a Cook trait, but it's just both him and his brother kind of run in a similar fashion, where once a little bit of a more aggressive contact's had, they do kind of just, I'm not saying they just fall, but I'm going to say that because I don't have a better word for it. They just go down easier than the average. But that's fine, as long as you just have someone that if a game is calling for it to be earned later on, you have then someone in your bag of tools that can achieve that, which Ray Davis is exactly that. And then from there, defense is overcommitting to a James Cook because they want to ensure that they just don't let him break one. What does that do for you, Josh? That opens up everyone else and everything else. You're going to go get it however you can. So it's not a problem. There's no issues with this whatsoever. And ultimately, it's great to see an impact rookie come in and provide a perfect complement to what you already had at that position that feels like a great 1-2 punch, a smash and dash, and you can really kind of let game flow, let game script, whatever you want to call it, dictate who's getting the ball a little bit more and feel comfortable with each either way that it goes. It's great. It's far from an issue. It's only a solution. And it's fantastic. And Ray Davis is the kind of player that it's so easy to root for when you watch him play and how he plays. And I love when Brandon Bean was on McAfee show talking about Ray Davis earlier this week or this past week. He talked about the one play that had him on their draft board, had nothing to do with his running game whatsoever. It was him standing up a linebacker and just de-cleating him essentially in pass pro. And that was what got Brandon Bean very excited about him. And then from there, he saw the rest of his tape and everything of such. And it worked out where he's like, okay, I like this guy a lot. We need to go get this guy. And clearly what you're seeing is something that highlights everything that Brandon Bean saw in that tape and what he likes about this player. It's being now seen in the Bills offense that it's hard to see this Bills offense not having that massive impact of a rookie of Ray Davis, getting them where they want to go if success comes later down the road, because Ray Davis is the kind of player, Josh, to me, that he's going to get more impactful as the games get down later in the season, as we approach the playoffs and you try to make that postseason run. He's going to need to be an important player complementary to James Cook as they try to achieve the goals that they have.
Speaking of players with lofty goals, the Bills' Keon Coleman had a big day today. He led all receivers, had his first 100-yard game for the Bills. And Luca, what are your thoughts on Keon Coleman at this point? I feel like what we're learning about Josh Allen is he's very comfortable anytime Keon Coleman is one-on-one. And that works out beautifully because with the insertion of Amari Cooper, the one-on-one opportunities should be there quite often. I think we're seeing that his body control is fantastic. I mean, the body control on the touchdown pass that got overturned was incredible. He just happened to bobble it as he was going to the ground. Where are you at with Keon Coleman? Are you higher on him than you were on draft day? Are you right where you're at? Is there anything he's done that surprised you? What is your state of Keon Coleman right now, 7 games into his career?
He's exactly where I was with him in the draft process. And what I love about that is that he's not a disappointment because he's too slow for, we'll call it too slow for the NFL, right? It's been known. I mean, he ran a 4.6 140. 40 times don't mean a whole heck of a lot, but ultimately it's like, yes, it was a slower combine speed. His game tape, it's not like he was electric on the game tape all of a sudden, but everything that he brought at a high level in college on the game tape in his draft evaluation, you're seeing it at the next level as well. It's translating well, even as he's a rookie. So what I love is that he's exactly what we expected, or at least what I expected of him. And you're not getting anything less than that. That's fantastic. I think the only reason we were seeing any less of that previously was just because there wasn't that Amari Cooper to draw the attention away. And the one thing Keon Coleman was never supposed to be was someone that creates separation, especially at the NFL level, due to those kind of limited speed nature things. And, you know, just his footwork wasn't entirely there and all of that fun stuff. Like, that is not what he was supposed to be. That's not what he was intended to be. And now you're seeing the benefit of it, at least in this game, where if you don't need that of him, and you can actually just at least have the ability to get him in one-on-one matchups and into open space within the coverage, he will still excel. He'll be able to use his body control and everything. And then on top of it, yes, he's not the fastest person in the world, but he can still turn up field and get in a little bit of, I'm not going to call it a second gear, I'll call it a 1.5 gear, and just make a big play happen and hopefully just not trip up a little bit where he can't put it in the end zone. But hey, everyone trips up. Turf Monster gets you once in a while. So, my Keon meter right now is as expected as advertised, and that is not a bad thing. That is perfect, especially for a rookie. Like, for a rookie to come into the NFL and be as expected, that feels almost as unexpected than them just being not quite what you hope them to be and only seeing splash plays. Like, not everyone can be a Brian Thomas Jr., where they're almost exceeding expectations. But some individuals, I'm not going to say who it was, some individuals saw that was coming with an athletic freak such as himself. It's a great place for Keon now to be, where you have your Amari Cooper, as we've already talked about, just allowing to ease that pressure or take the weight off of his shoulders and allowed him to just get more into space so he can become a bigger, a more meaningful playmaker in this offense, hopefully for games to come.
Luca, let's put a bow on this game with our favorite segment, and then we'll talk a little bit of big picture, because as we're recording this, the Jets are about to fall to 2-5. So I think we can have a little bit of a larger conversation about the AFC East, because there's going to be a couple of big time players coming to the Jets and the Dolphins here in the next week or two. We'll talk about that in a second. But before we get there, we're going to talk about our favorite segment, game balls and game checks. Game ball is pretty simple. The player who is our MVP of the game gets our game ball. Conversely, the game check award is the player who didn't even really need to show up today. They should hand in their game check. They were not needed. Luca, who gets your game ball for their performance today in the Bills' victory over the Titans?
It's not a super easy one, because there's a few candidates, of course. I do think this is an offensive kind of game ball situation. I think the offense, even with the slow start, deserves a little bit more of the accolades. I am going to go ahead and give it to Amari Cooper, just because the point that I made earlier, where it was even laughable that he dropped the first target that he had, only to, you know, follow that up with four catches for 66 yards. And of course the score on his first catch, it was perfect. That's exactly what you need out of an impact trade. And I shouldn't be surprised, because it lived up to the billing of what we wanted to expect from an Amari Cooper coming into this dressing room, into this offense, and seeing what could do, even on the limited time that he had the ability of picking up the offense, learning the playbook, doing everything he needed to do to be in there. It feels like his skill level is high enough that you could even have Josh Allen, let's say it was an option route, even Josh Allen reads out the play, just tells him, hey, it's a hitch go option. So then from there, Amari Cooper smart enough to pick that up, or just let him know what it is, and he's going to do it at a very high level. So his performance was great, and almost that drop to start the game makes it even better to me, where I believe he deserves the game ball. So Amari Cooper, you get my game ball.
I think that's the best answer, because everything, what I thought about this offense changed with the trade, and we saw a very big dose of that today with his insertion. There's a couple directions I could go here. I could go Keon Coleman 4 for 125, came close to getting a touchdown. I could go Brandon Codrington. I feel like every time he gets the ball in his hands, he's setting the Bills up with good field position. Greg Rousseau had 5 quarterback hits today and a half a sack. AJ Epinesa had a sack of the quarterback. Damar Hamlin had another interception. Tyler Bass perfect on kicks, but I'm not going to overthink this. 100 starts in the NFL, and Josh Allen is everything we dreamed of at start number one and more. And congratulations to him. 323 passing yards, 2 passing touchdowns, facilitated the ball to his weapons very, very nicely today. And it was an all-around great performance. And, he tied Patrick Mahomes for the 2nd most touchdowns ever in your first 100 games. Congratulations to Josh Allen. He continues to be just an absolute gift from the football gods. All right, Luca, with the good, we got to have some bad. Who's your game check award for the 34-10 victory over the Titans?
This is a tough one here. this is a tough one. For game check, here's the thing. It feels like a lot of times when you have a game like this, you would have like Sam Martin for the irony of he didn't really have to do a whole heck of a lot. But Sam Martin, in due respect, did have to do a lot early on. He had to punt the ball, and then Tyler Bass would be a scapegoat sometimes because he missed one. But hey, spoiler alert, he didn't miss a single kick today. So good on him. I honestly, it feels weird to say this, Josh, but I'm going to go ahead and say Baylen Specter, only because the only play I can recognize for one was him just horrible in coverage on a tight end. And two, it's kind of where I didn't like that the Bills even felt that they needed to be in a true 4-3 base defense like they were. That was then calling for Baylen Specter to be out there. Just it felt like almost overthinking it a little bit. And it's like, hey, just roll out your normal base nickel with Taron out there, and you're going to achieve everything you need to and more, because it's the better player for one that's out on the field. And two, he's still a large nickel corner where he can facilitate the same things similar to Baylor and Spector would do in the run defense, run defending, and kind of just filling his slot. So where I'm getting at with this is, yes, I'm giving my game check award or asking for the game check of Baylor and Spector, but it's not entirely on the player himself. It's more about why were we going into a 4-3 base in the first place? And then on top of it, Baylor Spector didn't exactly do well with his ask and responsibility in the one play that I kind of remember where he kind of flubbed coverage a little bit. So Baylor Spector, sorry, but you're my game check.
It's a fair one. It's a fair one. You know, Terrell Bernard did not need to come back into this game. Hopefully he's fine though going forward. This game was a blowout. There's several directions I could go here. You mentioned Sam Martin. I thought this was his worst performance of the season. Several of his punts just did not go very far. Had five punts where he averaged 39.4 yards. I'm debating if I want to do something because it feels like a little unfair, but I'm going to do it anyway. Before I give it out, I could also do Mac Collins, zero catches for 0 yards, still played a lot. But I will say, like, I'm happy he had zero catches for 0 yards. I don't want to talk out of both sides of my mouth. That's where Mac Collins needs to be. So I'm not going to get mad at him for being in that role. Curtis Samuel. I hate giving game check awards to a player that leaves with an injury. But if we're going to be honest about what this Curtis Samuel $24 million, $16 million guaranteed has been, it's been a disaster. And quite frankly, it's probably the biggest reason why the Bills had to go out and trade for Amari Cooper. And it's probably the biggest reason that changed in the Bills' mind of what they thought they had at receiver versus what they actually had. Another day where he has zero catches, leaves with a shoulder injury. And he's had the foot injury now, and I'm sorry, the toe injury. It was on the report last week, had it in camp, and now it's a shoulder injury. They just continue to get absolutely nothing out of Curtis Samuel. When he was signed this offseason, Luca, there was a segment of fans that thought that the Bills had just gotten a steal, that they had gotten somebody that because he'd been with Joe Brady and because he'd been in terrible offenses in Washington and Carolina, that they were going to unlock something with Curtis Samuel. To our credit, we stood there and we were like, let's temper our expectations a little bit. This guy has never been a special player in the league. I know he's fast. He's never been a deep ball guy. But as apprehensive as you and I were about Curtis Samuel, neither one of us could have predicted just how bad this could go. And there's still a lot of time left. Injuries are real. And there is a chance this team is going to need Curtis Samuel before this season ends. There's probably going to be another receiver injury or two. Whatever's going on with him health-wise, hopefully he gets right. Maybe he'll make a big play for the Bills before this season ends. But right now, 7 games into a 3-year, $24 million contract, he looks like absolute fool's gold. And it looks like that the Bills should have spent that money elsewhere. So for that, I hate to give it to a guy who got hurt in the middle of the game, Luca, but I'm going to give it to Curtis Samuel. The Jets have now lost officially to the Pittsburgh Steelers, and the Bills are at 5-2. The Dolphins are at 2-4 after losing to the Colts today. The Jets are 2-5, and the Patriots are 1-6, I believe. Does it even matter? Correct. Yeah, 1-6. Okay.
1-6.
I mentioned a couple of big players coming back for a couple of teams. One, Miami Dolphins will get Tua back next week at practice. We don't know if he's going to play against the Cardinals next week. My hunch is he probably will. All seems like it's going well there. That will certainly be a boost to the Dolphins, who have had next to nothing out of their quarterbacks since Tua got hurt. The Jets are going to be getting Hassan Reddick added to the mix here. That story broke on Sunday that Hassan Reddick is going to end his holdout and join the Jets. Luca, which one of these two teams, the Jets getting Reddick, having already traded for Davante Adams, having already fired Robert Saleh, and the Dolphins getting Tua back. I'm not saying you have to take either of them seriously, but if you had to rank one ahead of the other, which one would you at least have, like, if you're the Bills and you're looking over your shoulder a little bit, maybe you have like binoculars looking in the rear of your mirror, but which one is closer to you than the other one?
So the real answer is neither, but if I have to pick one,
I guess I could throw the 1-6 Patriots in there too. I mean, why not? It's one game separating them in the win column, but
it's 1-6 Patriots, and technically they have two games against the Bills rather than one like the others do. But I will not pick the Patriots. Patriots were up 10-0 in a game that they easily should have been able not to lose by 25 or whatever it ended up being with that last score. That is going to be burnt in my brain for 24 hours for reasons. but it's not the Patriots. I would honestly, so I have serious doubts on the Tua situation. I think that the talk got so real with Tua and his playing future and things like that, that it's hard for me to believe that it won't be in any portion of his mind as he's playing. And that just sounds like a distracted player through the process. And if there's one individual who just needs to be in the zone in the game kind of deal, that would be Tua, because if any timing's off, Tua is not exactly someone that's going to beat you with arm strength or just physical raw talent. So just for the sake that I believe the Jets roster is better overall as well, I'm going to go with the Jets, and they're just continuing to bolster. But I think lesson learned in the kind of the key point of this is Jets went out and got the marquee trade piece this past week. And of course, a lot of the rave things where the Jets are back and the hype was there, and you had Greeny on McAfee show wearing his Rodgers jersey after the news and being all excited about it. Is Hassan Reddick all of a sudden going to come in here and change the look of the Jets defense, which has been below their standards pretty considerably, considering how high their standards have been these past few seasons? No. And then the impact of Davante Adams, I mean, he had 3 catches for 30 yards in the first half, and then he was held with 0 catches, catchless in the second half. And the Jets offense kind of just kept stalling out, and it just wasn't working. Now, Steelers are a great defense. It's Steelers. You can't be a Steelers team without a great defense. And there's that to be said. But overall, I just question either of them being really impactful down the line, where I know the Dolphins will fold once the weather turns and the games get tougher and tighter, and you need to kind of have a little bit more of a smash physical grind nature to yourself. And then with the Jets, it just feels like the Jets are already running out of steam, Josh. I have no other way of putting it, where you're in October and you're already running out of steam. It doesn't feel like Rodgers is going to be able to put together an entire season physically at times. And I question if any of it's going to work in the end. So closer to the Bills, if I have to pick one, the Jets. But overall, the threat level is very minimal in my eyes at this point. I just think the schedules get tougher for them. And on top of it, the Bills already won the more difficult game among both of those teams that are more of a threat, that I just don't see where the threat ultimately lay with the Bills in the division sake.
Yeah, for either one of these teams to catch the Bills, they'll have to win in Orchard Park. Like, they have to get that one back for sure with as much ground as they're behind right now. The Jets still have to play the Texans. They got to play at Buffalo. They need to play Seattle, the Rams. I think their schedule is a little softer than the Dolphins. The Dolphins have the Cardinals next week. The big thing will be is if Tua plays or not. That they get the Cardinals on short rest, and then the Cardinals travel. That's not ideal, but still, I mean, the Cardinals are a weird team. They show up well. And then the next week they play Buffalo, then they go to LA. But then you look at the rest of their schedule, they have to go to Green Bay. They have to go to Houston. I mean, this is where they're dead. They go to Houston, and then they also have to play the 49ers. Then they play the Browns in Cleveland, which for a lot of us was like, well, that's a laugher. If we're being honest, now that Jameis Winston is probably going to be quarterback since the two guys ahead of him got hurt, that Browns roster is pretty good. They could beat the Dolphins. And then they also have to play each other twice. So, yeah, as far as the Jets and Dolphins go. So I'm not living in any kind of AFC East fear bunker, but I'd probably give a slight edge to the Dolphins just because I respect what they have there, where I feel like the Jets are just desperately grasping at straws. Like, we're going to fire our coach. Look for a boost. Oh, that didn't happen. We're going to trade for Davante Adams. Look for a boost. Oh, that didn't happen. We got 15 points and got blown out by Russell Wilson. it feels like that's a situation that could implode. Maybe not, but I haven't seen anything out of Rodgers where I at least think the Dolphins have a chance to be really good on offense when they get Tua back. and maybe that'll count for something. But the Bills are in fantastic shape. The Bills, next up for them, Luca, is a trip to Seattle. Have you seen the point spread for that game yet?
I have not.
Okay. Well, the Seahawks won big today in Atlanta, kind of saved their season.
Yeah.
What would you guess is the point spread for the Bills in Seattle is a 405 kickoff?
Yeah. Seattle did win big, but somehow they put up 30 plus points and we couldn't hit the over in that game. Just like in the Washington Carolina game, Washington puts up 40 points and we still couldn't hit the over that game. Mm-hmm. I'm not salty about it. Okay. Back to the point here. I believe if I had to guess right now, I don't think Vegas really likes Seattle. I'll say it that way. So yes, they blew out the Falcons, but at the same time, I think Vegas always likes to tip towards the Bills. And for that, I'll say Bills on the road in Seattle is probably favorited by 2.5.
I see Bills -3 on FanDuel Sportsbook. Okay.
All right.
And I do think that the larger point here is I was looking at odds today before the game started. I thought the Chiefs were going to lose to the Niners. But then when I saw the point spread and I was like, man, Patrick Mahomes is an underdog. Even as bad as he's been playing, he played bad again today.
Yeah.
It was like, it's just weird to see Patrick Mahomes as an underdog. I feel like Vegas.
He's money as an underdog too, for what it's worth. I definitely think Mahomes pays attention to it and knows, hey, you think I'm a dog? Watch this.
There's several quarterbacks, but you also need like a stable organization too.
Yeah.
I think Burrow would be in this mix if the organization was stable, but I just don't think, I think it takes kind of a specialer spot for the Bills to be underdogs in a game. And that's not going to be at Seattle. So how are you feeling about this game a week out, Luca? I mean, we saw the Bills look good today. I assume there's going to be more Amari Cooper. No injuries really in this game outside of Terrell Bernard, who hopefully is probably going to be fine. I mean, that's a big one. The Seahawks are dealing with a couple of big injuries. Tariq Woolen missed today. We'll see if he can come back. DK Metcalf left on a cart. Doesn't sound like it's as serious as it looked, but certainly two injuries to monitor. You know, this is a high, like high level view because we have not dove into this, but this is the easier portion of the schedule as the Bills now get Seahawks, Dolphins, Colts. How are you feeling a week out about the Seahawks game?
I feel very good about it. I'm going to be frank. I feel very good about it. I think the Seahawks are a team that truly can beat up on the mites, but when they get against the mighty, that's when they kind of fold a little bit. Geno Smith's been great. He's leading in passing right now. I'm sure still, I know he was going into this week. He had a great game, so I would imagine it's still the case. But it's one of those ones where I, no matter what the stats say, I'm not going to believe Geno Smith as an intimidating presence at quarterback. And ultimately it's going to take a great game plan and fantastic execution for them to win. And I will also say, you know, just don't let Boye Mafe in free to rock your quarterback for a fumble six. And I don't see where the pass rush threat is really there. I think their interior defensive line is the more impressive part than the kind of edge rush presence that they have. And I just feel like it's one of those situations where Josh Allen can take over where needed. I feel a lot more comfortable with what's happening weapon wise now after one game, what we've seen, that I don't trust the Seahawks secondary enough to feel like they're going to be able to do anything. And they don't have that game wrecker edge presence that could really take things over in that regard. So where are they going to hold the Bills under 30 points to make it a possible win? Because as I mentioned earlier, even when you're a box of scraps, this Bills defense somehow kind of shuts things down in the second half. And it does feel like with where they currently stand, depending on the Bernard injury, of course, but hopefully he's doing okay since he kind of was in and out a little bit. It's if you have Bernard, if you have all the parties that you need out there doing their thing, I mean, we're one of the best nickel defenses in the league. It's that's the perfect thing to have, it feels like, against the Seahawks. And it's just the matchup is very favorable in my eyes for the Bills. And look, Tyrell Dodson's going to try to have the biggest revenge game he can possibly have, but I'm not exactly threatened by Tyrell Dodson and blowing the game up and kind of ruining the Bills' day from the linebacker position with the Seahawks. So I feel pretty good about it. I would say, you know, Bills minus three right now in betting terms, I would definitely lean the Bills, but I will be nervous if we see it where it's like heavy tickets on the Bills, because then it could be one of those classic games where Vegas might phone in a call or two just to make it tight. But I'm feeling pretty good.
Yeah, I feel good about it too. I do think that's going to be a major test for the Bills defense, because Kenneth Walker is becoming one of the best running backs in the league outside of guys like Saquon Barkley and Derrick Henry. And if DK Metcalf is healthy, they have at least an argument for the best 1-3 receivers with Metcalf, Lockett, and Jackson Smith and Jigba. And Geno Smith is playing very well this year. So you throw in Noah Fant, who's a good athlete at tight end. This is a Seahawks team that's probably going to, you know, threaten your defense. So I think it'll be a good job by the Bills defense if they can shut down the Seahawks offense and or slow them down. But to Luka's point, their best pass rusher in Wosu is on injured reserve. They look very likely to be playing without Tariq Woolen. So this is a game that the Bills offense needs to go out there and score 30. And if they do that, I think they'll be just fine. All right. Well, whether they go out there and they score 30, whether they go out there and score zero, Luke and I will be back here next week to cover it all. I will be live at halftime. Sorry for the day off today. Had solo kid duty. But I'll be back next week for Bills Seahawks halftime show. And Luke and I'll be back next Monday for Bills Seahawks postgame show. For Luca, I am Josh McCarty. We will talk to you next week on Bills Channel.